Welcome to the Theralink podcast, where we dive into the inspiring stories of individuals dedicated to reshaping the disability ecosystem. Join us as we explore the triumphs, challenges, and innovative solutions crafted by changemakers striving to create a more inclusive world. From passionate advocates and trailblazing entrepreneurs to the resilient individuals breaking down barriers, each episode shines a light on the progress being made and the work still to be done to create a more equitable society that enables every individual the chance to reach their full potential. Get ready to be inspired, informed, and uplifted as we hear from those who are reshaping the narrative around disability.
Today, I am very excited to share with you our interview with Julia Franklin. She has a wide variety of experiences to share with us. She is a speech-language pathologist. She has been a clinic owner. She's developed continuing education courses. And now she is the Chief Learning Officer at Cephable. So let's jump in. All right, Julia, thank you so much for coming and talking to us. Will you just start by telling us about Cephable and your role with Cephable? Am I saying it right?
You are. I love that question. That's usually the first question is not what is Cephable? It's like, am I saying that correctly? So a little background on the name, Cephable comes from the idea of a cephalopod. So as you would explore our website or our app, you'll see an octopus. We love this idea of the intelligence of an octopus, how adaptable that it is. And that's what we want to bring to our software program, which is an assistive technology platform that you can use on a Mac or a Windows-based computer. And we hope to move digital interaction beyond a keyboard and a mouse. So anything that an individual can do with a keyboard or a mouse, we can assign adaptive voice controls, face expressions, head movements, virtual buttons, so that people can use computers in the ways that work best for them beyond the keyboard and the mouse. And we just want to not only improve independence, but we want to maximize the independence that anybody can have in terms of how they interact with their computers.
That's great. Can you tell us what your role is with Cephable?
Absolutely. So my title is Chief Learning Officer, but I came into the company with a background, and I'm still a licensed speech-language pathologist. But I think one thing that kind of speaks to my role is what makes us unique as a company. So our go-to-market as a company is we kind of have two arms of the business. We have a community side and we have our revenue side. And I come as a therapist, as a person on the community side. So I get to work with community-based organizations like state-level assistive technology programs, vocational training programs, and we get to, my favorite part of it, is that we get to provide our software, the full platform, for free to individuals who need it. And that has been just a joy as a therapist. I'm not a salesperson. And we find that there's this idea of the disability tax that anytime, you know, if a person with a disability gets a computer, but they have difficulty using a keyboard and a mouse, there's often that additional expense that comes with buying new hardware, new switches, new controllers, new joysticks, just to be able to access the computer in the same way as somebody who can use a keyboard and a mouse. And so we, on the community side, get to provide that not only to the individual, but to organizations who are serving people with disabilities who need these adaptive controls. And as a therapist, I love this idea that the folks get to bring their abilities to the tech and not just their disabilities. So we get to problem solve together. I get to work directly with the users and help them kind of maximize what they can do with our platform. I guess there's a lot more facets to this, to my role, than I even thought until I start talking about it out loud. So community partnerships, working directly with our users, and that other side of the business that I mentioned earlier. So I'm on the community side, and then people go, well, how do you keep the lights on in the business, right? How do you build a business? Revenue side of our business, we are able to license our software and integrate customized controls to organizations to bring, you know, more adaptive inputs to their employees, to open up additional user base, just to help companies not just check a box of compliance, but just allow folks to, you know, approach the services like healthcare records, or be able to bank more independently, or play a video game more independently through these like customized platforms and streaming services that are available.
You mentioned video game playing. That's actually that's a challenge that we've encountered currently. So with my son, we got him a Nintendo Switch for Christmas, and there were some adaptive controls that came with it. We've also had to modify in a number of ways and find some other like switches and adaptive controls for him to use.
Yeah.
And there is a level of frustration that goes into that as we're exploring, and like any other six-year-old, he wants to play and play now. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit of a journey, but yeah, I can totally relate. Now, another question for you, I guess. So you mentioned your background as an SLP, and just curious, what motivated you to transition from the traditional therapist setting into a role with a technology startup, and how's that experience been so far?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I actually want to loop back to what you were saying a little bit about your son. So as a therapist, I love to do things that are functional. I love to do things that promote connection, that promote community, that promote people being together and being able to be their full self. And we can't deny that video gaming is a way that kids and students and adults of all ages, right, that they can come together. And that's a big part of the origin story of, you know, our founder created this so that he could play with his brother who had some dexterity challenges. So I just want to encourage you, Brennan, to keep pushing those video games and problem solving. So although we're not integrated directly with the console of Nintendo Switch, a lot of our inputs can be used with games on a computer. So mm-hmm. browser-based games, a lot of, you know, like Minecraft can be used on a computer too. So always a fun thing to explore what our users find.
Absolutely.
So back to your question, how, as an SLP, how does that played into moving into a tech company? I get that question all the time. You're an SLP. What are you doing in technology? I have always loved movement. I've always loved motor planning. I've always loved functional activities. And it's just provided a way for me as a therapist. I think I mentioned before, for an individual to bring their ability to an interaction with me. And I got kind of frustrated as a therapist, even early on. It just didn't sit right with me that I had to justify a deficit in order for a student or a client to be able to receive my services. So I had to say a percentage of, you know, deficit. And it always just bothered me that there was so much compliance-based, deficit-based language associated with even just getting somebody, you know, into my room from an insurance company or an IEP. And moving into this role in a tech company has just opened up that strengths-based perspective that I've really loved just as a therapist. I've always, you know, leaned into those approaches that have been very strengths-based. And so it's been exciting to have that as the guiding factor in this new role.
Can you share with us a kind of real life personal story of how Cephable has impacted somebody?
Absolutely. I can't pick just one. I have a couple of stories that pop in my mind. So we were demoing Cephable at an expo, and we had an open your mouth to be able to hit the space bar so that people could shoot a basketball in this really simple browser game. You just hit the space bar, open your mouth. And so people would walk or roll up to our table and be able to play this game. And this individual came up at the expo, and he wasn't able to, on volition, open his mouth. His ability was he could vocalize, but he wasn't, it was a different vowel sounds. It wasn't a full word. And so as a speech therapist, and I was there with my founder, we were able to modify Cephable in that moment to then listen to any vocal sound, any vowel sound. So the fact that he could just vocalize to hit the space bar instead of opening his mouth was the very first time that he'd ever played a video game at all. And I will never forget that moment, to where that truly made me see that the ability, like whatever you can bring to the table in terms of volitional movement, we can map that to something on a keyboard and a mouse that's going to unlock an experience, hopefully, that you haven't had with a computer. And that's been really exciting. Another example that I think of is one of our users. She's a lawyer, a disability advocate, just absolutely brilliant. She has put together this extraordinary suite of, I think like 10 or 12 different types of assistive technology software programs, different types of hardware to support her ability to do her, highly demanding job. And she found our platform, and she has been one of our biggest champions because she's been able to decrease the number of software programs because we have so many different types of AT in the app. She could do a lot of our different inputs that would somewhat replace and augment some of the other things that she was using.
That's awesome. Thank you for that.
You mentioned conferences. Cephable was at CES this year, correct?
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to hear your perspective, because I would say outside looking in and from what I had seen within my own network was that it seemed like there was more technology, more companies this year that was geared towards individuals with disabilities, because traditionally it's more of a consumer electronics conference. Just interested to hear what your experience was like there and your take.
Yeah, so I didn't go. We kind of divide and conquer at expos, but just the report back, Brennan, was exactly what you just said, that there was so much synergy among other companies that were not only the companies that were focused on disability tech, but the number of companies that walked by and came up to the booth who were open and excited to not just, building more accessibility, but realizing their consumer market having, more options and can grow it if we just make things equitable and accessible for everyone. It's good for business. It's good for the individual. And so it was just really exciting to hear the synergy and a lot of, creativity of the way that our engineers can, help integrate Cephable even with some other existing hardware. And we could work together with hardware, software, and we're not trying to replace and become, the most, if you have Cephable doesn't mean that you're fully accessible. We want to be a company that can work alongside existing hardware, existing other programs to augment, to, work in tandem beside other things too. And that's definitely what they felt at CES through that community.
That's great. I guess to build on that a little bit more too, can you give us some insight as to how you work with employers or government organizations or, nonprofits, et cetera, in advance of onboarding your platform and making sure that, I guess, as a as an organization, they're prepared for launch?
Yeah. So again, we have, that kind of two sides of our business. So I work with organizations that are preparing individuals with disabilities to go into corporations. So we provide trainings, we provide tutorials and resources for those folks to make sure that the individuals that they're working with and preparing for the workforce can maximize and identify the profiles that they need and the inputs that are going to work best with them. And so they can understand their options, because humans are dynamic, right? We have different contexts. We have days or our energy is higher or our pain is different or our disability may look different. And so really trying to help organizations on the community side understand how to help their users maximize their autonomy with the platform.
Mm-hmm. I know when I work with families who are, you know, I work with pediatrics. And so when I work with families whose child is going to enter into more of a gen ed setting versus being in their special education setting, there can be a lot of apprehension that the classroom of children is not prepared for the student. Yeah. Is there any sort of preparation that you have to do like that to the company just socially to know how to kind of have those open arms for someone that looks different or works different?
I love that example. And Bethany, that actually reminds me a little bit of some of the research that I've been looking at in the world of AAC, augmentative and alternative communication, that we not only have to teach an individual how to use an AA system or alternative inputs on a computer, we have to provide opportunities socially from peers or from parents, from siblings, of everybody using alternative inputs. Because no matter if we have a disability or not, there are times, you know, a temporary disability or a time that you would rather lay in your bed and use voice controls than type on a keyboard. And so I think having parents and teachers and siblings kind of normalizing the options of different ways that we can interact with our technology will support the students with disabilities who are making that transition. Just seeing that options are what everyone should have and not just a person with a disability.
It's interesting how some technologies that initially started off for individuals with disabilities have become ubiquitous in so many ways.
You know,
for instance, closed captioning. You know, many of us use closed captioning just watching TV in general. I know I do oftentimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, mainly for, you know, purposes of convenience in a lot of ways, and you know, other voice to text and you know, other technologies in a similar vein. And I think to your point of utilizing technologies, you know, initially for individuals with disabilities will ultimately find those technologies ultimately find their ways in everyday society, and it becomes more normalized, if you will, for others. You mentioned you know, with AAC, one of the things that with Elliot, we, you know, talk about a lot because he uses an AAC device is that, you know, for him, it's just another mode of communication. And actually a lot of his classmates seem to understand that. It's adults that have greater challenges in understanding that, you know, this is his mode of communication and how he navigates the board and how that all works. It seems like it's almost more intuitive for some of the children in his class. So yeah, it's really a kind of unique time that we're living in, I feel like, in that more and more visibility around these technologies is making them more mainstreamed. And I think that certainly bodes well for future generations.
Yeah, I think you bring up a couple really good points of like how kids just intuitively understand multimodal communication, and that we as adults have to intellectualize this idea that, yeah, there's times you don't want to order your pizza by calling, so you text it or you order it online because you're preferring a written form of communication, or you're laying in bed by a partner and you use closed captions because you don't want to wake them up. Or it's just fascinating, and even gestural communication. And there's so many different modes of communication that when you actually break it down, you realize, you know, we all need different forms of communication. And so AAC is just another great form of communication. And you also made me think of like true access, true accessibility is contextual. Like we have to have the tools work for us in different contexts, and they have to change over time. They have to be fluid. We have to be able to take them with us. We have to be able to, you know, for them to modify and grow with us as our bodies change, or we break an arm, even for somebody who doesn't generally have a mobility disability. It's just amazing how you don't think about accessibility until you think about accessibility because you need it or a loved one mm-hmm. needs, you know, a new way to access something.
Yeah, it's, I want to say I read it in a book somewhere. So I read a book recently. It was Disability Visibility. Alice Wang, yes. I believe, is the author. Yeah, great book.
Yep.
And but just the fact that, you know, disability is the one minority group that any one of us could join at a given moment. It takes one accident. It takes a stroke.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, having a society that's more accessible in advance, you know, and not just when we need it is certainly where we need to be going.
Yeah. I also read that book, Brennan, and also her other book, Year of the Tiger, is her individual story. So she showcases, you know, stories of others and disability visibility, but her story also is brilliant.
So do you have any advice for parents who are kind of at this beginning journey with augmentative communication or different ways of accessing technology? Like you're seeing kind of the point where people are getting to start to work or start to, you know, interact with school. But when the parents are at that beginning point and it can feel very frustrating and discouraging, I'm looking for like practical, like focus, you know, focus on their strengths or even like just emotional, like it's, they will communicate, you know, what do you have for those parents?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love this question. And I think whenever frustration and comes into a conversation, it makes me always go back to nervous system and go back to connection, go back to safety. And if we push to a place of frustration, our nervous systems aren't in a place of feeling safe and connected. So we're not going to access language and problem solving and all of these higher level academic tasks. So we have to go back. And no matter if you're working on a new AAC device, no matter if you're working on, you know, trying to have alternative inputs on a computer to do online school or homework, we have to create those moments that are safe and connected and an appropriate level of challenge within that window of tolerance for the student. And sometimes that means lowering our expectation in that moment of how much we need to get through or what our true goal is in that moment. And I think we don't talk about play often enough, especially for students in education, but also for adults in the workplace, that if something is fun, if we're enjoying what we're doing, if we have autonomy, we have independence, and it's ultimately something that we're interested in, that idea of play and curiosity is going to drive us, our nervous systems, back into that safe and connected interaction so that we can get to some of those higher level academic and, you know, cognitive goals. I have one website. I am not affiliated with them whatsoever, but I am an absolute like fangirl for this website. It's called Neal Fun, NEAL.fun. And this developer has made some of the most beautiful games and engaging activities that as an adult, as a therapist, as a parent, I've used them with my own kids. I've used them in therapy sessions. I've used them in training adults with CEPHABL. And just some of these interesting things with like facts about space where you can just scroll with an arrow key, like up to see different parts of space, or you can go diving in the sea, or you can look up the year of your birth and read facts about, you know, what happened in that year and just these really interesting activities. So finding things like that, finding tools that are just motivating for you and the student, client, or yourself. We're all learning. And if we're not, we need to be. So keeping it fun when we can.
That's great. So with CEPHABL, what's on the horizon for you at this point?
Yeah, so exciting. Well, we are just continuing to build our user base, continuing to build out different relationships with companies to integrate and license with. And one thing I didn't mention before when we talked about my role that is going to always be on the horizon for us is this program that I co-run with our director of engineering. His name is John Campbell. He and I run this, we call it the consortium, which a consortium is a group of octopuses. And I told you before, we love cephalopods and octopuses. And so this consortium is our user feedback program. And it's also what we call kind of the heartbeat of our community. So we bring in cohorts of individuals, right now adults with disabilities, visible, invisible, episodic, and we bring them in for user feedback sessions, and they find bugs for us. They give us feature requests, and our users have given us some of the absolute best ideas. And we find that truly building out this program is keeping us grounded, is keeping us, you know, solving problems for real people. And you solve one person's problem, then that's going to help, you know, many more people in the process. And so, although it's something that we're doing currently, that's always going to be on our horizon, no matter, you know, how much we scale in terms of user base.
At Cephable, do you ever partner with other organizations that are focused on inclusive culture at work, like consulting agencies?
Can you give me an example?
Sure. So there's a company based in Raleigh that I'm familiar with. It's called the Diversity Movement, and they're very much focused on inclusion in workplaces. What brings them to mind is actually they were one of the first groups that I was aware of that was actually focused on disability in the workplace as part of their DEI initiatives.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think I mentioned before, you know, AT programs or vocational programs, but we've partnered with a variety of different community organizations that are aligned with our mission. And when we find that synergy with a group, we don't have a single way that we partner with organizations. We like to find, you know, there's certain ways that different organizations like to reach their communities. And so sometimes we'll do webinars, or we can co-write, you know, thought leadership articles. We can include each other in newsletters and that sort of thing. So there's not really a one size fits all approach to partnering with groups. We've had journalists come in from specific organizations that are focused on a single disability and, you know, write articles and interview our users. So we're always looking for folks who are like-minded in terms of inclusion and independence.
I have a question for some of the therapists out there. Do you find yourself using your SLP skills on a day-to-day basis now that's kind of surprising to you, or not surprising, but what skills do you find from that clinical background that you find yourself using now?
It's always that problem solving of how do I look at this from a different angle? How do I think about the functional application? And I had the most invigorating conversation with an ATP, an assistive technology professional, and she was working with a client, and she just called to pick my brain about what inputs would be best for this client. Here's what's going on with their work. What would you suggest? And I got off that call and just felt like, wow, like that's exactly the intersection of technology and my clinical brain, and then being able to provide real resources to be able to support that client for some roadblocks that she was having, so she could just take into her session.
So with all that said, how can folks get in touch with Cephable, and where can they find you?
That's an awesome question. So our website, cephable.com, has direct links for, as I mentioned before, anybody can download the software onto a PC or a Mac and play with it. We don't have ads. It's not a light version. You just get the whole thing and you can play with it. We have a pretty active Discord community where people can bring ideas, people can bring support. Our team's on there. Our consortium members are on there. We have Facebook communities, and the greatest area is just really educating your communities that this tool is available, because we're still new. You know, we're new to the market, and a lot of people find out about us and go, "Why have I not heard of this?" And we could really, it's just great when people can share it with their communities and get it into the hands of the folks who are looking for it and don't know that it's here.
That's great. Thank you. Do you have questions for our guests? Send your questions to info@theralink.com. You can also find us at our website at theralink.com and on our socials with the handle @theralink.